From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Harley Agostino is the executive director of Base Building for Power. Thank you so much, Harley, for being on the Oregon Grapevine.
Great to be here with you, Barbara.
Let's start with, what is Base Building for Power? What is the organization's purpose, and how's it going?
Sure. Base Building for Power is a organizer training community and organization, and we train labor organizers, community organizers, student organizers all over the U.S., Canada, and various other countries. And we have been around for 4 years, and we, you know, believe that the world is on fire with multiple crises, and our small part in that is to train the next generation of movement leaders.
This is kind of a general overall view, but when we talk about organizing, is it necessarily political action, or is it also, I mean, is it political in the broadest base of that, or are we also talking kind of within your workplace, or how does the word organizing work in this context?
I mean, I guess to use myself as an example, I was thrust into a tenant organizing situation where a bunch of Latino families were being evicted in Southern California. And I started learning how to improve my community. And that took me sometimes into political arenas. I was a labor organizer for 15 years. I formed tenants unions in every community that I've been in. So when you train somebody with the skills to improve their community and to organize and base build, which by that we mean to, you know, recruit more volunteers and more people into the movement, you can really take that into anything in your life.
Does it include everything from canvassing to passing out flyers to just talking to someone in the grocery store? How do you define or use these skills and encourage people to do it and maybe not be nervous?
Well, the nerves of getting people involved are many, and we all have them. And, you know, our approach is that you really just get better by doing it. There's really no book, there's no podcast, not even my YouTube channel is going to help you get out over the nerves. You just got to do it. And if I knock on 1,000 doors, I'm going to feel a lot less worried about rejection by that 1,000th door.
As you have been doing this work for a number of years, do you feel that these times in this moment are bringing more people to the fore to say it's time to do something?
Absolutely. I've been knocking on doors and training organizers in swing states and swing congressional districts and primarily rural communities, but also urban communities as well. And every time that I talk to somebody, I ask them to volunteer, to step up, to talk to their friends and family, to knock on doors, to do something. And last year, 87% of the people that I and our team talked to were willing to do something. The challenge that we have is that while there is a huge interest in everyday people, if you go into a park or you go to someone's door to step up in their community, there are not enough people who are asking them. There's not enough people who are trained on how to ask and given the space to get over the nerves to ask a lot. Because when we go and ask, people are willing to step up. And our role is to really train people to get not just the skills, but also the confidence and also the community to be effective agents for change.
I know that with nonprofit or community building boards, there is always an issue of, at least in my experience, board members do a variety of things. But one of the main things that they do is they need to fundraise, whether that has to do with, in whatever form that is, stuffing envelopes, etc. But it always kind of makes people the most nervous that they're going to ask their friend to please support the library or please support this political action as if that person's never going to talk to them again. So how do you kind of talk to someone to say, no, really, it's easier than you think?
I think more important than it's easier than you think is kind of reframing the ask. I was trained by United Farm Worker organizers who taught me at a young age that when you're asking somebody to do something, you're giving them an opportunity to improve their lives. And if you really believe that, then it's not about you. It's about giving them that opportunity. So same goes for fundraising. If I'm asking you to support this cause and I believe that you care about this cause, then I should ask you and give you that opportunity. It's really asking is really empowerment. It's really believing in people and enabling everybody to make their own choice of what to do. Now, what we're always afraid of is that the person's going to say no, that they're going to say, how could you ask me for money? I don't have any money. How could you ask me for time? I'm burned out. And does that happen? Yeah, very rarely. But yeah, it happens. But even now, when that happens, it's like, look, I still gave that person an opportunity. And whether they take it or not is up to them. And they may have all kinds of things going on in their lives. All of it has nothing to do with me that could prevent them from wanting to or feeling like they have the capacity to. But the role of the organizer is really to ask and learn to ask with confidence. And when you approach it from the standpoint that you're giving somebody an opportunity to make a decision, then that's the thing that's helped me the most get over guilt or fear of rejection.
This is putting you on the spot a little bit, but in your years of doing this, is there an anecdote or two that kind of steps up to you, a person that you still think about that you think, wow, look at that. They came as this and they ended up doing that. And isn't that interesting or amazing?
I mean, my life is filled with people. It's one of the things that I love the most about this work is just how much I get surprised. You never know. I'll give you an example. Alinda is one of the trainers now of our program. When I first met Alinda, I met her on a on an online we were doing like an online phone bank. And she came in, she had this really grumpy face. And I was like, okay, I want to see how is this gonna go? I'm not sure this person is a good fit. There was just a vibe. There was just a vibe, and I was just like, I don't know. But like I said, I'm gonna give this person an opportunity and let's see what happens. And she's a working class person who's been a pastry chef in a Safeway for 20 years. Never organized before, never had the opportunity, had a lot of feelings, but never had the opportunity. Has a trans kid, has a kid in jail, has a lot of lived experience. She's indigenous. And so she basically completely surprised me. And not only did she turn out to be a good organizer and very tough, but she also that attitude or the like grumpy thing that I saw in the beginning, she's actually a totally lovely person. And everybody likes her and everybody works with her. And if you were to tell me that She's going to be leading a training of 100 organizers. I would have said, I doubt that. I would not have put my money on that. So there's lots of people like Alinda that surprise you. I have all kinds of people, they flake a bunch of times. And I think, well, maybe they need to learn discipline. Maybe they need to learn how to be structured about their time. Not everybody, I had to learn those skills. And so I don't want to judge somebody. So, but there's a lot of, yeah, I could go on and on. There's lots of Alindas out there. But it goes back to, withholding your judgment, giving people the opportunity, and then see what they do with it.
There are lots of things going on that I imagine and I know personally and around draw people to be like, it's time to do something. Why isn't anybody do something? But what do you think, and maybe it's a thousand reasons, but why does someone finally call you? It's like, what causes them to one day kind of wake up and go, okay, I can't do this anymore. I can't just sit here and watch these people doing this, or I can't take my landlord's stuff, or I can't, whatever it happens to be. Do you think there is a common something that finally causes people to say, I've got to go for it?
I think the common thing is that they're asked. I mean, there's no shortage of issues going on in the world that are affecting all kinds of people in our community very deeply and affecting us emotionally. The number one thing that gets somebody to do something is being asked. And it depends who asks them. Like somebody on social media, that's better than nothing. A random person at your door, apparently I get 87%, and people on our team get 80. That's a pretty good amount. Somebody that you know, that's the best. So if you can have an in-person conversation with somebody that you know and you say, look, I'm really upset with what's going on with ICE taking members of our community. And whisking them away to, countries they've never even heard of. Are you upset about that? And if you're my friend, that I probably already know the answer to that, but I would ask you anyway. And then you got to get, and then it's like, okay, well, let's do our part. This is what I'm willing to do. Will you join me in doing this?
And I'm imagining there are conversations about apathy because I think it's easy to look around and be really upset and think, yes, of course, I agree with you, my friend. These things are horrible and they're terrible, but really, can I do something? How do you get them to say, yes, you can?
Yeah, I don't believe in apathy personally. I think that everybody, I mean, maybe there's a tiny percentage of people that actually don't care about anything and anybody. But it's more, what's the obstacle? What's the obstacle? What are the common obstacles for people to not step up? They're afraid. So maybe somebody would be afraid to go to anti-ICE rally now that somebody just, people are getting shot at them. That's an understandable fear. So fear is a big, big reason that people don't do things. Not feeling that it could make a difference. So those are two pretty common ones. So it really depends what the obstacle is in terms of what I would say. If it's fear, then you got to talk about the fear. And why do we need to stand up even though we're afraid? And you identify, maybe I would share stories of how I've stood up for myself when I was really afraid. If it's about, I don't think we can win, which I'm sure there's a lot of people now saying Trump's got all the power. How is it possible for us to win? I might give examples. I think the most compelling thing is I think we could win, and this is why, and convince, and just leading by example. I think a lot of it is leading by example. So you're afraid, I'm afraid too, but I'm doing this because of this. Why didn't you join me? You don't think it's possible? You know what? Sometimes I also feel that. I'm not a si se puede person 100% of my life. I get down, I get depressed. However, this is why I stand up, and you should join me. Will you join me?
I have heard a phrase about it's specifically about canvassing and the whole act of going door to door and people to people, but I've heard an expression that I'd love you to explain a little, which is deep canvassing. Could you explain what that is?
You know, if you asked 100 different people about deep canvassing, you'd get probably 100 different answers. My understanding of it is that it's a reaction to transactional door knocking. So a transactional door knock would be, "Hey, how's it going? Is your name on the list? Are you supporting Kamala Harris for president? Undecided? Okay, great." And then you just went in, found the person, got their information, and went out. That's not a conversation. You're not moving anybody. You're not persuading them. And so I think a lot of people, when they talk about deep canvassing, it's about really engaging people in a real way around the issues that they care about. So, for example, you could say, "Hey, I'm knocking on doors for this campaign. I'm really upset with the high cost of living. This is really affecting me. Is it affecting you? How's it affecting you? You know, what costs are you struggling with the most?" "Oh yeah, that's me too. I had this, lost my appendix last year, and I got an $8,000 bill. And so like now, and that's going to take me 4 years to pay off." And then I share that story about myself, and then they share a story of how they had a huge medical bill. And so that's a situation where we're connecting with each other. And then it's really mobilizing people into action. I think one difference that I have a little bit is that some people talk about, like, we need to just do deep listening, like 30-minute, hour-long conversations with people at the door. And some people will do that with you, but we have to talk to so many people. And I actually think that you can have a genuine conversation with somebody in like 3 or 4 minutes. So I'd rather have a good conversation, connect about our experience with the healthcare costs, agitate them about, who's getting rich off of our lack of health, ask them to, do a step, sign a petition, volunteer, do something, and then move on to the next one. I think I can make an impression in 3 or 4 minutes with folks. And if I can do that with 20 people in a 2 or 3 hour, then I can start to figure out, okay, who's And if I, let's say I recruit 18 volunteers or 18 people who say they'll do something, there's probably a gem in there that would really do a lot. I got to find that gem. But if you just spend 1 hour talking to one person, it's going to be hard to sift through and find the gems that are really going to be the movement leaders, the Alindas, like I said.
What inspires you, Harley, to keep doing this work?
I mean, I was trained by United Farm Worker organizers and leaders, and in particular, Dolores Huerta in the early 2000s. And she was co-founder of the United Farm Workers, of course. And she coined the phrase, "Si se puede," which is said in marches throughout the world now and was co-opted by Barack Obama. And so, but learning about Si Se Puede from Dolores, it wasn't just a word, right? It's an attitude. It's a, like, we can do this. And when I learned about the farm worker struggle and how they stood up to the growers, the most powerful bosses, and just really nasty stuff, and Dolores herself, single mom, 12 kids, labor leader, just saying, si se puede, we're going to do this. That spirit is infectious. And when a group of people gets excited about that, it all kinds of things can change. That doesn't mean that every campaign is a victory. I've lost all kinds of stuff, but I've won a lot of things. And so now, being an organizer for 25 years, I can point back to tons of victories of when workers have stood together, or when tenants have stood together, or when our immigrants or our community has stood together, how we've actually won tangible things. So nobody can convince me that it can't be done, because that's just not my experience. Now, 25 years ago, as a young organizer, I had to learn that. I had to trust. I mean, my elders, I had to listen to Dolores and see what she did. And she told me about the examples. And then I saw that. I was like, okay, well then I believe that. I see it. I believe it. So then I did it. And then she trained me how to organize. And then we made all kinds of changes. And then that experience just, helps you, getting that firsthand experience of change or victory is better than reading the books or watching the documentaries, because you feel it just much, much more viscerally.
Let's circle back to the very beginning and just talk a little, if you will, expand a little on Base Building for Power and that organization and how people can, why perhaps they should be involved or how they can get involved specifically with the work your organization is doing.
So we started 4 years ago. Actually, was in coordination, was a collaboration, excuse me, with the Dolores Huerta Foundation. And we do trainings all over the place, and we have lots of different kinds of trainings. We have a YouTube channel, which is obviously not interactive, but it's something. People seem to be liking it. I don't know. We have virtual 3 week trainings. We do in-person door knocking trainings. You can sign up on our website, basebuilding.net, to learn about different opportunities. We run campaigns around economic, racial issues. We contract with organizations, with labor unions, with community organizations. So if there's any organizational leader that is looking for help on how to build their base or recruit volunteers, we do that as well. And then once somebody is a part of our network, we're actually really a community of people that build together, because we know that organizing for racial and economic justice is, it's challenging, and the only way that I know how to do it is to be in community with people. And so we help people make connections. If you were organizing tenants in Oregon, I know people who are organizing tenants all over the world that I could connect you with, right? So we connect, we connect. There's a lot of different things. It's kind of hard to put in a nutshell, but training people with the skills in various different formats is the main thing that we do.
And a phrase that keeps kind of coming back to me, having been involved in other kinds of organizing and work, is the idea of reinventing the wheel. I think sometimes you get into this place by yourself or in a small group and you think, okay, I've got to figure out how to do this. And actually, people like base building, organizations like base building, or these other places, it's better, it can be better and really useful and empowering to find other people who are doing the work and oh, we tried this and try this, etc. So I'm assuming you have conversations about that as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the funding world loves shiny new objects. And so it kind of forces organizations to create like different wording for things that we know work. I mean, deep canvassing, Dolores would probably say, yeah, that's just organizing. That's what we do. We connect with people and then we push them into action. Like, there's not So I do think it's important to learn from our elders. And when I look at what I was doing 25 years ago and what I'm teaching now, it's not the same, but it's very sim it's pretty close. And but it has been, it has been molded. Obviously, every generation is different. My predecessors didn't teach anything about self-care or sustainable organizing. I had a whole conversation with our trainers yesterday about boundaries and what that means in a movement building, in a leadership content, why in a leadership context, why that's important. That's not a conversation that was had 20 years ago, right? So there are some good, there are some new things that we need to develop, but the basics of how to get people to step up, it hasn't changed very much. And it's also not that different in different countries, because I've organized in different countries. A boss is a boss, a landlord's a landlord. Fear is fear. The wealth gap is widening everywhere. The right wing is getting higher, is getting more powerful everywhere. Anti-immigrant sentiment is in every country, right? So there's a lot of dynamics that are happening and that we can learn from. And in some ways it makes it easier to learn, because it's really just about connecting with people, being open, being honest, being genuine, and then asking people to do the courageous thing that you've decided to do.
Thank you so much, Harley Agostino, for being here today and being on the Oregon Grapevine and for the work you do. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh, pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.